Welcome to the LSE Events Podcast by the London School of Economics and Political Science. Get ready to hear from some of the most influential international figures in the social sciences.
Welcome to LSE for this afternoon's festival event, Saving Our Digital World. I'm Nick Caudry. I'm a professor here at LSE. And I'm very, very pleased to welcome Adele Zeynep Walton and Indra Ray, and all of you here in the theatre and our online audience. Adele is a journalist reporting on the human impacts of digital technology and social media, and the author of a wonderful book, Logging Off, The Human Cost of Our Digital World. Adele is an online safety campaigner, regularly works with parliamentarians and policymakers, families and parents to campaign for tech accountability. She's a member of the Online Safety Act Network, a founding member of EU Youth Movement Control Alt Reclaim, which is how I heard of her, and she's co-founder of Logging Off Club, which is a global movement promoting community and connection through phone-free events. Indra is a social media presenter who recently completed her undergraduate studies in psychological and behavioral science at LSE. For the past 3 years, alongside her degree, she has worked as a content creator at LSE, producing over 100 short and long-form videos for an audience of more than 2 million. I wish I had more than 2 million. More than 2 million followers across TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Her work spans research explainers, documentary episodes, live event coverage, translating complex academic, political, and economic ideas into accessible digital storytelling. And in September, Indra will join Bloomberg as a trainee journalist. You may wonder why someone as old as me is chairing a discussion on this topic. Well, it's not just because I've survived at LSE for sufficient time, but I actually do have a stake in this topic. My last book, The Space of the World, was on the social challenges caused by social media. And I think that, frankly, cross-generational discussions are absolutely vital right now. That's what we need to have. The hashtag for today's event is hashtag LSE Festival. Please put your phones on silent, as the event is going to be recorded, and we hope to make it available as a podcast. We're going to start with some discussion between the panel for about 30, 40 minutes, but there will be plenty of time for questions. So, let's get started. No one would argue that connecting to other people is a bad thing. And no one would argue that the digital platforms that connect us are in principle a bad idea. Sounds like a good idea. And no one would deny there are many good things about the ways we currently use social media. But we wouldn't be sitting here if that was all there was to say, right? So starting with Adele, but for both of you, can I ask you, how as societies should we start to deal with the many harms associated with social media? Do we need, for example, to change how we think about tech?
I think, you know, changing how we think about big tech is definitely a starting place. I think a lot of us, and it's funny because when I started writing the book, it was 2022, and the conversation has drastically changed since that time. So I'm always sort of conscious that when I wrote it, I was thinking and looking at the public perspective at a very different place to what it is now. And obviously, like this week, we've had the social media ban in the UK, which obviously we're going to talk about. And I think initially, a lot of us thought of these platforms as faceless entities, and I think that really challenged our ability to push for accountability. And I think as well, you know, there is this dissonance, or there was a dissonance between, say, me scrolling on Instagram and the more tangible, harmful effects of addictive algorithms. We weren't fully aware of that yet. So I think, you know, the understanding of these platforms and how they function has changed. And I think a real moment where that happened was Trump's inauguration, and we saw all of the tech bros there lined up, you know, their faces fully on display of these are the people shaping our digital world, dictating our digital world, and creating the platforms that we are now heavily dependent on. I feel that that was a changing point for a lot of us. And since then, I think there has been a massive push towards greater accountability for not only the most extreme harms that we experience, but just generally, these people should not have so much of a say in dictating our digital lives, which we now all live in.
Ingrid, what's your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all of that. I think where we need to start is obviously a broad question, and I'm sure you all have different opinions on this. And I think you can go kind of down the macro route and really look at big tech and reforming policy and regulation. For me, instinctively, on a more sort of practical, personal level, if you really care about, you know, people in your family being harmed, your friends and stuff, I'd really like there to be a little bit of a shift where we think about the harms of social media on quite it's quite person-to-person dependent. I don't think people talk about that enough. Mm. I think if you're a parent and you're worried about your kids, the way that Instagram is going to affect your daughter may be very, very different to the way it's going to affect your son. And I think if you really want to take care of them, you need to think about the nuances of that, because obviously there's so many harms with social media. We know that if your daughter has body dysmorphia, has an eating disorder, social media can be a horrible place, but maybe your son is making their career off social media. So I think I kind of want to see that shift a little bit.
Mm. Yeah, because your answer, Adele, was more at the structural level, and that's where the debate normally is.
Mm.
But as with climate change, we also, each of us, have to do things differently. We're all users of social media.
Yeah.
Even me, I'd started using enthusiastically, but then became very disenchanted with it. So, Adele, going back to you, do we as individuals need to change what we do with social media, as Indira was implying?
Yeah, definitely. Of course, like, at the individual level, we all have a part to play in, you know, shaping our digital world. Like, my book is called Logging Off, and I think we sort of chose that title because it's like, yeah, this looks like a wellness book for how to have a healthy digital life. And then it's like, bam, get on board, join the fight, organise, like, mobilise, like, be part of the tech justice movement. And I think, you know, on the one side, we all have a part to play in reflecting on our own personal relationships with social media. That's something that I only did while I was writing the book, because if I hadn't had downloaded an app to regulate my screen time, I would not have got that book written in the deadline that I needed to get it done in. So, you know, writing the book for me was a very, like, personal and introspective reflection. But at the same time, it was also a political reflection of, OK, I care about social justice in so many other areas of my life. That's how I got into journalism, and freelance journalism was, you know, I started a blog when I was at university. And then from there, I started writing and pitching to editors. And, you know, the same sort of energy and approach of activism that we have to other areas of our lives, whether it's climate justice, whether it's the fast fashion industry, whether it is social justice, racial justice, the same sort of activism that we choose to do and, like, take part in our lives in that way, we also need to do that in the tech space. And I think it's sometimes a challenge because a lot of us have imposter syndrome when it comes to tech, like I certainly did before I wrote the book. But I think for way too long, tech has been gatekept by the very minority few, mostly, you know, middle upper class and white tech bros who have. And that is how we have now got to a space where we are, where, you know, the lived experiences of certain people are not considered in creating the next technologies. And we're seeing that now, the sort of same patterns of harm unfold with AI and generative AI in particular, the same pattern is unfolding because we've still got this very gatekept space of tech is only, you know, created and shaped by a handful of people. And I think that's where we need to get more involved politically, for sure.
Right. The guys who write the code, it's their problem.
I mean, that's kind of, building on that, I think you're totally right. I think, you know, it's kind of Silicon Valley and it's siloed off. But I think we would all be way more powerful if we, like, educated ourselves and put emphasis on continual learning. And I think you speak about it in the book a little bit, like, you need interdisciplinary learning, like, and push yourself. I think we all are guilty of this. You kind of hear these big words like algorithms and generative AI. And I think, not to attack some of the more oldies in the room, but I can understand you maybe didn't grow up with that terminology, so it's easy to just kind of shy away from it. But the more you learn about how it really works, both from a scientific perspective, but also interdisciplinary learning, learn about it from a social science perspective, from learn about it through the arts, because it kind of helps you slow down and really question, how is this affecting society? Is it ethical? And it helps you hold these people to account because, I mean, it's classic, but education is power.
Of course.
That's really interesting because it sounds like you're both saying that we have to change how we think about this massive, very, very, very complicated process that's taken over society for 20 years and that's pretty opaque. It's not easy to see into. Mm. And at the same time, and that involves learning quite a few things, I'm biased because I study media, but I've had to learn an awful lot to find out what I needed to know to have a view as a citizen about what needs to change. But we're also all entangled with this, and you are both entangled in different ways in using it, part of your daily work, and that means you've got to change everything about the way social media is threaded through your life if you're going to make the bigger contribution you believe you should be making. So that's extremely complicated, and everyone's in sort of the same bind in a way.
I think that's, you know, that's another reason why so many of us have been sort of maybe slower than we are in other ways to criticize these platforms that we use every day, because we feel that if we critique them and we call them out, then, oh, but you're a hypocrite if you're using the platform. And I think we wouldn't have that same logic to say the medicines that we consume or the cars that we drive in. Like, we would be able to say, okay, look, you know, society as a whole are dependent on this particular medicine, but it should be regulated. It should go through checks and balances to make sure that it is something that contributes positively to society and doesn't cause heaps of societal harm. And I think on an individual level, a lot of us have to sort of undo that internalized guilt that makes us hesitant to criticize these platforms. Like, even I think about it all the time. Like, I am present on social media, I am dependent on social media and these platforms. I would not have gotten a book deal if it wasn't for my social media presence and the effort that I, you know, sort of put out in creating content and things like that. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that I shouldn't be able to say, this could be a better alternative. We could have a better way where young people are not being, you know, pushed towards content that promotes self-harm. And I think none of us should have shame in saying that and being proud of saying, actually, yes, I may have, you know, an account on this platform, but that doesn't mean that I'm not entitled to critique the platform.
Yeah, I
think that's right. It's not one or the other. But I mean, it's difficult. I mean, obviously, you both are probably way more in this area. Yes, I work in social media, but I'm not pushing back against social media companies. I mean, I guess I'm asking both of you, where would you even start? I'm kind of sat here like I'm not disagreeing with you, but I don't actually fully know where I would start.
Well, I'm going to keep quiet because
this
question of entanglement is quite interesting, is it? Because you built a career, you know, through influencing and changing, which is a really valuable thing to do. No one's going to say that's not valuable. The reforms we might have could end up cutting across that. You might agree with some of the reforms. So, I mean, that this question of how we're entangled, I'm just interested in how you think about that, because I'm sure it's something that you're thinking about as you move forward into your next stage of your career, where you're certainly going to be using social media a lot, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you've kind of hit the nail on the head. It is so complex, and every single issue you talk about, I mean, obviously the under 16 ban has been a huge topic of conversation this week, and I had a birthday party the other day, and it was filled with a bunch of people my age. We're all about 22, and we've all had social media pretty much since we were 9. Mm. I mean, I think I'm even, like, we're both young, but I think even I'm half a, like, decade younger than you, and the difference in probably how you grew up in social media versus me versus my cousin who's 5 years younger, it's all so different. Like, I have, honest to God, probably since I was 9, been on Instagram every single day. So anyway, so I went around the table and I asked everyone's verdict on the ban, and everyone is just so conflicted because it's such an integral part of our lives. We sort of feel like we should be pro it, and yet it kind of, you feel like you're stripping something from us that's been so integral.
Yeah. Let's come back to that thorny question in a minute, because implied in what we've been saying is another really interesting question about how much power do we really think the users of platforms have. In many areas of consumption, the consumer has a lot of power. They can destroy a brand. And these are brands, but they're also platforms, they're spaces we work in, we do other stuff through. So how much power do you think that the users have to influence this? And could they use that power more than they actually do or have done so far?
Yeah, I think we have more power than we recognise. And I think that's because, again, like coming back to this idea of us being sort of slower to catch up when it comes to activism in the tech justice space, whereas compared to other, you know, like climate justice, for example, like I think we haven't seen the same tactics being used that we would in other industries, say like boycotts. Like boycotts are so powerful, but we haven't really collectively boycotted, say, ChatGPT. And I know that there are like new and emerging campaigns around that. I think it is literally called Boycott GPT, I've seen. But I think we've not had a sort of organised movement to do those sorts of things. And I think, to be honest, social media has been one of the reasons that we haven't had an organised movement, because we all feel so pulled in so many different directions, because we feel bombarded by information overload all the time. We don't really know quite what is the most pervasive issue that we should be, like, channeling all of our efforts towards. But yeah, I think there are tactics that we definitely can use. I think we do have more power. Are we going to come back to the social media ban?
We're definitely going to
come back. I'll wait on that.
Yeah, I mean, kind of shifting to mental health, because obviously that's a big part of the conversation with social media. I'm a big advocate that we do have a lot more power than we think we do. That is not me detracting from like the big social media companies need to do a lot more. They've designed crazy addictive platforms, etc., etc. But the reality is, despite these new bans, social media is here and it's not going anywhere. So in order to once again protect you, protect your family members, I've kind of always wanted to see a little bit of like a agency movement on social media, where we're all encouraging our friends to really think about the content they're consuming, and is this actually making you happy? Because we're all capable of figuring out what makes you happy or not. And you can adapt the algorithm. If you understand it, you can click three dots on Instagram and say, I don't want to see this content creator, this health content creator who makes me feel horrible. You can shape what you're seeing. Like a lot, I've now curated a feed for myself, which is actually quite positive. It's filled with quite inspirational content. It inspires me. I also... like every time I see something that I know is going to help me when I'm at a low point, I save it. So then when I'm kind of spiraling, because we all spiral, we all have our stuff. When you have a bad day, I now actually know that for me, social media is actually a very positive space. And I go to this saved folder on my Instagram, and it kind of helps me with my stuff and puts my life into perspective. So I would love to see that be a kind of movement. And I think if we all work together and encouraged each other to do it, social media would be a lot more positive.
Do you have a response on that? Like, that sounds interesting. How do you react to
that? It's interesting. I think sometimes too much of the onus is put on the individual to curate our feeds, to regulate our algorithm, to tame the business model of social media. I don't think that should be our responsibility. I think we have a duty to, you know, push back when harms happen. I think we have a duty to organise, to mobilise, to build a movement around that. But I don't think it should be down to us to, you know, flag harmful content and to... also, and I think naturally, like, as you Gen Z as well,
yes.
I'm the older end of Gen Z.
I'm back in the middle.
Yeah, so, yeah. Like, I think Gen Z have, and a lot of Gen Z who've grown up on social media, we naturally will go to that, instinctively go to, like, oh, okay, so how can I like, wean back control over this platform? How can I, like, romanticise this space? How can I make it better? And what I would love to see is for more of us to be like, actually, maybe what I don't need right now is social media. Maybe it's community offline. Like, maybe it's like to step outside and talk to a stranger and remember what that feels like and recognize that it's not as harmful or scary or anxiety inducing as we often think it is. And I think only after writing the book was I like more towards that perspective, whereas before I probably would have been doing that of like, oh well, I'll just, you know, tweak the algorithm to make it more better for my individual experience. But then if we're just all thinking about our individual experiences, we're missing a whole lot of the harm that's happening to other people.
It goes back to what you were saying about the entanglements. It's so complicated. I'm not disagreeing with any of that. It all comes together, and you want to challenge the big tech companies, but you also have to look after yourself and people around you. Yeah,
What you do in your practice, these marvelous videos which translate really difficult ideas, hopefully for a broader audience, is what people have been doing for centuries, taking ideas in difficult books and putting them in a form that can reach that wider public that needs to have that knowledge. And of course, that can also happen in movements. It can happen face to face. You've so far done it social media, but maybe you've got a talent that you can spread in all sorts of offline contexts. But let's move on to regulators and governments now. Basically, and we don't have to only talk about the social media ban, because there are other possibilities, but are they doing enough? Have regulators and governments done enough? And if they really haven't, where do we start in getting that right? And we'll move on to the social media ban, no doubt, and your views on that.
In short, they haven't done enough. Else we wouldn't be in the situation that we're in today. I think for so long, the governments have been in sort of in the pockets of big tech, basically. The big tech lobby is massive. They are influencing and speaking to our politicians and, you know, pushing for certain regulations and laws all the time and pushing against other ones. On the ban, I think this is like an example of a sort of get out of jail free card for big tech, because basically we're saying, right, okay, young people are not going to be on this harmful platform, and I understand the motivations behind the ban for under 16s, but at 16 the platform is still the same harmful place that it was, you know, and it still is now. So it essentially is letting big tech off the hook and not holding them to account for making the product safe, which is what we have all been calling for, is safety by design. And that would actually make these platforms safe and not so addictive, not so harmful, and would tackle so many, not just child safety and online safety, but would tackle so many of the other social crises that are being fueled by big tech, like whether it's misinformation, destabilization of our democracy, like what we saw recently with Southport and the riots that happened as a result of misinformation online. All of those other areas could be tackled by safety by design and policies that would actually mean that addictive algorithms have no place in social media. And yeah, sadly, I think went to this policy as a way of, like, before the Makerfield by-election, being like, oh, look, I've done something really significant, you know, hopefully it was going to, you know, gain him a lot of support. I think it was very strategic and savvy. And I think it's also worth, like, looking at what online safety experts like the Online Safety Network, which I'm part of, had been recommending to the government, which was safety by design. It wasn't a ban on under 16s. A lot of the psychological and mental health evidence does not support a ban on under 16s. So although I understand the motivations from parents, I don't support the motivations politically from Keir Starmer.
And Ian Russell wrote a very powerful piece in The Guardian this week, making it very clear this is exactly not what he expected the government to do in response to all the evidence that so many families have given. So that's one view, real scepticism about this ban. What do you think?
We're basically on the same page. I think this, when I was at my birthday party, all my friends thought this. It kind of just feels like a bit of a PR political stunt. I think it sounds fantastic. I hadn't even thought about the fact it was pre the Andy Burnham thing. Maybe Keir Starmer was a bit scared, but it sounds like a great thing to terrify parents who don't really understand how social media works. But the practicalities of it, I mean, back in my day, where I said I got social media when I was 9, it was banned up until 13. You were like a weird kid in school if you waited until 13 to get social media. It's gonna be the same. I'm sure very few kids are actually gonna wait until 16 to get social media. They're gonna find a way around it. So I kind of just don't think it's gonna do anything. I mean, we could be wrong, but I'm much more pro, I don't know what your opinion of this is, I'm way more pro, like, app time limits. Because I think we can all agree that, like, 15-year-old Billy scrolling on TikTok until 3 a.m. in the morning is objectively bad. It's objectively bad for him. I think that, like, completely taking it away from them or banning them from it up until a certain point, what's that actually going to do? I think it would be way better to limit young people's use, maybe even adults as well. Yeah. Like, talking about an app limit for everyone.
That's the other question. Yeah. It's not just under-16s are affected. It's the whole of society, as we'll be discussing in the next panel. And then there are the arguments, for example, a brilliant piece by disabled activists this week, that that's how she found a world of other blind people was through social media. So you can't exactly dismiss that. And then, as you said, there are all the issues about, will this ban even work with VPNs and all sorts of other difficult issues? So, okay, so we're going to part that. We're not satisfied with that. But I just wanted to take us back to what might be the core of this, because I was very struck by a very powerful sentence in your book, Adele, and I'm going to read it. But this won't be a long reading because it's four words. But for me, this sentence sums up pretty well everything I've been working on for the past 10 years in four words. It gets to the core.
Sorry.
No, it's so good. sorry to build it up so much. But we share, they take. That's the violence. We share our lives. That's all we have. And they take that from us. That's an astonishing sentence. So that does raise the question is, maybe the problem here, and this is not easy for any of us, and it would be easy from your perspective as someone who actively uses this from a business point of view, is the problem then just this, the extractive business models, the very idea of them that drive today's platforms? And how can we seriously think about challenging those models that have those effects without at the same time endangering the excellent work of people like Indra, who are making a really positive use of social media and themselves really working out how to somehow get the best out of this? But most people don't have those skills, let's be honest, at the moment. They don't have those skills. So how do we seriously, as a society and communities, take on those business models? What's your...
Regulation.
Yeah.
For me, like, you know, it's not very exciting and, you know, like, yeah, sexy, but regulation is like the first thing that we need to do. And what would regulation be in this case? It is starting with safety by design on all tech platforms and apps that we use. It is before new tech products are released, making sure that they are safe. And fundamentally, we have not had that with things like ChatGPT. You know, ChatGPT has already now been involved in teen suicides and suicides of all ages, but suicides as a result of these, again, an addictive technology that is designed to keep a user hooked and is just designed to tell a user what, you know, what they want to hear. And basically, you know, with no safeguards, no flagging towards support services, nothing like that, has actually ended up in people taking their lives as a result. So, you know, we've sort of again had we've not yet missed the boat, because I don't want people to feel like, oh my God, it's too late. But we've already got platforms that are not safe. So then what we need is for our governments to have greater tech accountability. And that will only come if we collectively are all lobbying our governments to do so. Because at the moment, like, the sort of tech accountability space has been limited to, you know, brilliant organizations that and think tanks that are in the space, or bereaved families, or victims of violence against women and girls, like people who have experienced image-based sexual abuse. It's been very much limited to people with direct lived experience of harm. And I think that needs to change, because if we just only have a few handful of minority of people who've experienced the worst case scenario of harm, and they're the ones pushing for tech accountability, then it's going to be seen as a niche issue and framed as a niche thing that only a handful of people want. It's the same, like, it's the same logic that we should apply to racial justice. It shouldn't only be marginalised people fighting for racial justice. We all have a part to play in that fight. And actually, tech accountability, the same way as any other form of social justice, we all benefit from this. You know, we will all benefit in immense ways. So I think the sort of fight needs to be broader. It needs to be more united. And that's why I would urge everyone in this space to, like, in this room, to get involved with brilliant movements. And I'm happy to share those later on.
That's great. Just before I come back to India, I just want to focus on something you said, safety by design. And I wanted to find out how far you will push that, because, you know, I want my kettle to be safe by design. But I do want a kettle. But the problem is, what if the whole business model of the social media you've been on since the age of nine is itself rotten?
Yeah.
How do we deal with that? Could it be? I mean, this
kind
is a question.
Kind of is.
Well, this question I've been asking myself, and, it, you know, this is not going to be easy, but let's see if we even think about this. Should we be having governments saying, you know what, if you do not clean up your act substantially, really seriously, in the next 2 years, we're going to ban you.
We're going to block
completely
it
from the whole country. You just will not be allowed in this
so
country.
Difficult.
And if other countries work, let's assume multiple countries work together, because every country is itself powerless. Would that be the answer, or at least the threat of that? Would that be the way to force those companies to the table, the threat of that? Assuming it's taken seriously.
It's really difficult, isn't it? Because, like, in practice, what would that likely lead to is dictators and certain governments threatening that in a situation where, like, the general public having access to social media is not in their interest, not in their political interest. So I think it's a slippery slope to say that a government should be able to say, right, we're going to shut down, you know, Facebook in this country, we're going to shut down Instagram access in this country.
Let's just assume it's all the good democracies of the world, more or less, whatever that means. Assuming that, agreeing that in sync. Australia almost got pulled in when they started to have a go at Facebook for their news issues. What if that were to become generalised and you'd have the whole of the European Union saying, actually, you've got 2 years to sort this out, seriously, otherwise, game over. Would that be a way forward to at least to get the discussion started?
Even 2 years, I don't think they'd listen. If it was like a really, if it was like, okay, you've got a week to turn off the addictive design.
Which is your business model.
Or we will block it from our country. I still don't think they'd do it. Like, I just don't think they would agree to it. And that's not to say it's not a good idea. But again, I think it would only be constructive if it was, like, collectively organised by someone, say, like, the UN or the EU. Or, you know, like, for example, in the conclusion of the book, like, I write about, like, we should have some sort of universal declaration of digital rights. Why don't we have that? Like, if we are acknowledging that the digital space is our also physical space now and the two are, like, inextricably linked, I think we do need more of that sort of international collaborative, like, policy mechanisms that would mean that we aren't all individually at the moment, which is what is happening, is that, you know, one country is doing this, one country is doing that. And really, is that a productive way to regulate an entire business model and a global business model that is essentially the most powerful business that we have ever seen? It's not effective.
No.
So, yeah.
No, sure.
Andrea? Kind of going back a little bit to the line in your book, "We share, they take," because you know a lot more about the system than I do. You've obviously written a book about it. I'm kind of curious, as a lay person who just likes posting on social media, likes posting my holidays, my friends' birthday parties, why should I be scared of all the information they're taking from me when I share content? Like, what should I be scared of? Or why should I be concerned that they're taking information from me?
I mean, it's not to be scared, but it's to recognise the inherently, like, exploitative nature of this business model, and that, you know, whilst maybe on an individual level you don't yet feel it tangibly and you've not experienced direct harm, I think everyone can recognise, and I don't want other people to experience, like, lived experience of harm, but I think everyone can recognise the harms that exist, and I think that's what we need to be not scared of, but angry about, and actually reluctant to just, like, surrender to it and say, yeah, okay, like, you know, Facebook has played a part in genocide, but I just want to post this, you know, like, and I understand it as well, because again, like, it's really conflicting as someone who is on these platforms, uses these platforms and utilizes them to reach more people, to get more people angry at these platforms. It's difficult, but I think, like, everyone should recognize that we have stakes in this fight, and
I was just kind of curious to know if there's any type of data perhaps they're taking from all of us that they're using in some way that maybe I wouldn't know about or something.
Well, who knows? There's a lot going on. But just one final question before I open it out. We've been discussing some pretty difficult, very complex issues. What still gives you hope in this space? What still gives you hope?
Well, I think earlier this year, what gave me hope was the lawsuit against Meta in the US, in New Mexico and LA. Like, Meta was fined $373 million in one of the cases and $3 million in another one. And that gives me hope because I think, you know, that was a watershed moment of accountability. And, like, a jury recognised in court, you have a harmful business model, you have a harmful product, and we need to regulate you. And I think that was powerful. So that gives me hope. But equally, on a grassroots level, what is really exciting is seeing, like, all of these new movements emerge. Like, Pull the Plug is in the UK, the first sort of anti-AI movement, and they're doing a lot of activism around data centres in the UK. Global Action Plan, which is a climate charity, are also doing a lot of work around data centres and AI. And they recently, with Pull the Plug, did some sort of like a takeover in Brick Lane for South by Southwest Festival, which was, I think, a couple of weeks ago, because part of Truman Brewery in Brick Lane, the really historic building, is at the moment under like plans to be turned into a data centre. So Pull the Plug and Global Action Plan are doing work around that. So I would highly recommend everyone in this room to go and look into that, get involved. Because essentially what's happening right now with AI and the AI hype is, under our noses, our governments are pushing things through that will mean that in a few years' time, we have water scarcity in the UK because of data centres. And I think that's what we now need to be really concerned about is, you know, the scale of this expansion and this boom of this new industry. It's going to cause us so much harm in a few years. So whilst I've ended on a sad note, check out Pull the Plug.
But that's hopeful that you can talk about stuff.
And there's resistance happening already. Exactly. And I think we took a lot longer to catch up with the resistance around social media. So, yeah.
Yeah, and AI is moving very fast. Yeah. Resistance there. Indra?
Yeah, I mean, I think we keep jumping between kind of talking on a macro level and the individual level. I agree with all of that. I think on a almost much smaller, much sillier level, I'm an optimist at heart. I'm a big techno-optimist as well. I do think, because of my career and in many ways, it can do a lot of good. And I think... particularly for parents who maybe are less familiar with social media, there is also a lot of good stuff on social media. It really does unite people from all around the world. It can be hilarious, you know, like one single comment that's funny, it can get like 300,000 likes, which is, like you said at the beginning, that's not inherently a bad thing. So I am an optimist. There is still a lot of good in the world. Yeah.
Well, I'm now going to open the floor to questions from the audience. If you're online, I don't know how many are online, but hopefully some, please type short questions into the Q&A box and we'll try and answer as many as possible. Please just include your name and affiliation. And if you're here, please raise your hand and I'm going to group questions in rounds of three or four. Just let us know your name and affiliation and wait for the stewards with the roving mic to get you. So we'll start off with the audience here. Who do we have? There's a lady at the back and then the gentleman in front. Hello, Uji.
If you were personally one of the heads of one of these large companies and you were being mandated to change your business model to help young girls specifically on these apps, like, how would you go about it?
Okay, thanks for that. Then Uji in front. And...
Hi. I would like to take on this We Share, They Take. And I would like to put a question mark on this, on they. We tend to view the situation, the the digital world the same way we view the physical world or the biology, you know, it exists, and these are the rules, and that's how it's done. That's how the world is. But actually, the digital world we created, and I'm a computer scientist, and I can tell you with all my scientific authority that they are not necessary. I mean, it's how it's built. There's a huge economic incentive behind it, which then creates political and incentive to sustain it. But it's not a necessity. It's not the rule of nature that they exist. Our smartphones are powerful enough to connect to each other, and we can do all the stuff that's happening today with they, without they. And I would just want you to think about this possibility.
Thank you very much. We'll take one more question, the lady over there, straight ahead of me, and then we'll come back for more in a moment.
Hi, I'm the CEO of a mental health charity, and we specifically work with women and girls who are victims of domestic violence and abuse. So my question really is, how do we educate the parents to keep their children safe?
Okay. Up to you to answer whichever of those you wish, as many as you want.
I think, for me, I might just take the first one. I think that was a really good question about young girls specifically. The first thing I think that came to mind for me as a young girl who's grown up with social media is I seriously, tragically, I'm very lucky I have many friends all around the world. I can name maybe three who don't have some sort of messed up relationship with food and body. I think you wrote about it briefly in your book. I don't know if you agree with it. I think that I am a big defender of social media, but I think one thing it has destroyed is people's relationships with food and what they look like. So for me, I don't know exactly what I would do. I think it's really interesting. I'm going to go away and think about that, but I would want to tackle that because clearly something's going wrong.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think the quickest thing, again, like I've said, is to turn off the addictive nature of the platform. If our algorithms and Instagram, for example, was not designed to addict young girls wouldn't be shown pro-anorexia material, because why is it that young girls are going to be shown that, whereas young boys are shown pro-misogyny material? Is because they know that when they're designing this platform, that is more likely going to engage a young girl. She's more likely going to keep scrolling and looking at images that show skinny women, like unhealthy women, like, you know, comparison images, that type of thing. So turning off the addictive nature of the platform would be the quickest solution. And again, that goes back to, but that would mean that they make a whole lot less money, because then the young girls or anyone is not staying on the platform for as long as we are. But I think it would help so many people, not just girls, but also young boys too.
And on the question of educating parents, or yeah. Udi's completely different question is, if we're looking for hope, maybe we need a deep fundamental redesign. You know, you could get the same set of connection through a radically different technology that doesn't even pass through big business.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's why in the EU, at the EU level, there's a lot of movement towards breaking up the big tech monopoly, because I think we recognise that the reason that so many of these this handful of platforms is harmful is because they have a monopoly over our digital world. And actually, if we went back to the earlier days of the digital world and the earlier days of the internet, it felt more community-based, it felt more hopeful. Sadly, I wasn't of the generation that got to experience much of that, but if we went back to that sort of way of you know, a digital world that is co-curated by all of us in community, then we might not have such a harmful and a sort of dictatorial digital world. But yeah, the EU People versus Big Tech in particular are doing a lot of amazing work around breaking up the monopoly, so I'd recommend checking them out.
Parents, any words, advice for parents, the older generation? Yeah. What should they be doing different?
Look, you know, like, again, like I've mentioned, like, I wish it wasn't up to individuals to, like, be fixing this problem. But I think when it comes to educating parents, and a lot of what could be done and beneficial, I think, is parents coming together in community and sharing different experiences, sharing different tactics. Even just, I think, the awareness that other parents are having the same challenges with their young ones is so powerful. And I think that's why we've seen smartphone-free childhood has grown massively in the UK, because parents have previously thought it's an internal, a family battle. And, you know, my family have been through this directly. Like, my parents have thought, oh, this is our problem to fix, and this is like a fault of our own parenting. But if we came together in community, like, whether it's through schools, whether it's through community groups, faith groups, I think parents can exchange a lot of their own expertise and share what hasn't worked, what has worked, but also changing the norms of, like, you know, at family meals, not only are the kids not on their phones, but the parents aren't on their phones. Like, changing that collectively and having a shift in the home, I think, is up to parents to model and for all of us to be doing the same things. And I think that's not just parents. I think it's friendship groups as well. Like, I think we all should be doing that too. Like, Gen Z, like, every generation should be doing that. Of, like, if we're meeting up as friends, maybe we should just, like, keep our phones in our bags in the time that we're together. And, yeah, like, changing those norms, I think, can really help.
Great. I'm going to take some more questions here. I don't know whether we've got any more. Let's cover this. We're getting a lot. And I think, yes, I remember you did have your... So we'll take that question of the gentleman right there, and then we'll take you, and then the lady there in the front, you just that side. We'll take three, and then we'll maybe see if we've got any online. Over to you.
Thanks for the lovely talk. My question is, we're talking about the digital world. Now, you both as, you know, females, do you think there is a gender bias in digital world? Even so in AI, because all the major tech companies right now we have are headed by males. Mm-hmm. So don't you think, what are your opinions on this? Thank you.
Okay.
Hi, I'm interrupting this event to tell you about another awesome LSE podcast that we think you'd enjoy. LSE IQ asks social scientists and other experts to answer one intelligent question, like, why do people believe in conspiracy theories? Or, can we afford the super rich? Come check us out. Just search for LSE IQ wherever you get your podcasts. Now, back to the event.
Hi. There's a big emphasis on education, but if you look at, like, the food industry, crisps, we all enjoy a bag of crisps, but there was harmful ingredients in the past in those, and there was moves to make sure those ingredients could not be included. There was an education piece for parents to say, you probably don't want to give crisps for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, so there is a balance between the two. Similarly, in financial services, we do fact find. So we take a lot of information from you as a customer, but we can only utilize that information for that product that you're purchasing. We can't use that information now and start swinging it for every other purchase, because you've told us that information in confidence for that particular product. What sort of things can we learn from other industries and apply this to this space?
Okay, great question. And then the lady right there.
Thank you very much. I'm going to swoop in defense of this ban, and bear in mind I am 16 years old, so if it came into effect right now, I would be banned. Nevertheless, I think there's something that it does very well, because I think there's a harm that wouldn't be dealt with just safety by design, and that's the fact that social media shapes our identities. Early in the talk, one of you talked about the idea that you know what makes you happy, and you can build your algorithm accordingly. Well, I'm 16 years old, and I think a lot of my friends don't know what would make them happy if they weren't online. Who we are is shaped by who we are online, and as politics moves ever more into identity politics, and identity is ever more dictated by people in big tech, that is a serious problem, and that's something that you might say is quite positive, that you can find yourself online and find your interests. But it's limiting to people because they don't... Let's put it this way. I have friends who don't even know what they want to do at university. I have friends who chose the wrong A-level subjects because they haven't sat and thought about who they are as a person for long enough because they've been too busy scrolling TikTok. How can we deal with that in any other way that isn't just a cold, hard ban?
That's another great question. Whichever one do you want to answer?
That's a tough question.
Yeah.
But have a go.
Okay, gender bias. On the gender bias question, there is a massive gender bias in tech, not only like in the industry and who dominates certain roles and obviously more superior roles, but also in the uptake of new technologies, which I find really interesting. Young men are a lot more likely to uptake generative AI technologies than young women. And I think that is a reflection, again, of an awareness as people who have more likely had lived experience of those types of harms that have played out on social media, we're more reluctant to, you know, uptake those technologies that probably aren't yet safeguarded and things like that. So there's definitely a gender bias. I think, again, you know, how do we tackle that the same way that we tackle it in other industries and have been slow to tackle it in other industries, you know, in every industry pretty much. And also, I think another big part of it, which I write about in the book, is having people with lived experience shaping the decisions that get made in tech companies. People with lived experience shaping the policies and the design features of technologies. And that's something that a lot of the women who work for violence against women and girls charities that I interviewed for in the book, their primary recommendation was trauma-informed design. And basically that means people with trauma and lived experience shaping the design principles of new technologies would actually make them safer. So, yeah.
Okay. Do you want to come back maybe on that?
I think, yeah, the identity one, I think it's a super interesting point. And I think I'm glad you brought up the word identity, because I don't actually think people talk about it enough with social media. And I think you're so right for young people. And I feel this 100%. My social media accounts are part of my identity. And I agree with you. I also have friends who I think haven't developed any sense of self, because all they've kind of known, all they do with their life is scroll on TikTok. And I kind of think it brings me back to the point, I'm kind of maybe pro app time limits, because then all of our friends are then going to be forced to go out and do stuff. The question is, as I'm sure you've all seen in the news, is, right, these kids suddenly are going to have a bunch of free time. What the hell are they going to do? Which is then a whole other concern. And is government going to invest in youth programs, et cetera, et cetera? But yeah, I don't know if you have anything to build on that.
No, yeah, just on that, part of the like announcement of the ban also came with the government announcing that they're going to invest 132.5 million into youth spaces. So that is really positive. Like, that was one thing that I was really pleased and excited to see as part of the announcement of the ban, because I think that is what young people need, is the spaces where they can go and be in community and get to know people, have role models, have hobbies, sports, like music, art, get into the things that for so long we either don't get into because we're spending too much time on social media, or we live vicariously through the content that we're consuming online. And I'm guilty of that as well. So,
we all are.
Yeah.
I've got one question come online, and also one or two more to add in. So I want to give those people a chance. I'll read out the one online first. Thank you to the panelists for recognizing the violence of data extraction. The question is, in countries with very high social media usage and growing digital autocratization, I guess that's partly what you were talking about, you know, in authoritarian societies, how can individuals push back when the problem is very much structural and institutional, making coalition building and community-led organization very difficult? So imagine Iran today, if we imagine having this debate in Iran today, how will we answer that question differently? So that's one on hold that thought. Now, I can't see because all this stuff in the way. You had a question. I'd like to take you next. And who else? Maybe there. And that we're probably all we've got time for, because we're coming up to 6 o'clock.
Great. Thank you for the talk today. So there was a worrying quote that went viral on social media today from Jeff Bezos, from his latest interview, where he essentially said that biological consumption of water was going to get in the way of AI development in recent years. It was quite a worrying quote that he said quite full-throatedly. Alongside that, just me as someone who's working in the corporate world at the moment, in the last 2 years, Copilot went from being a feature that sat on the side to being something that actually drives executive decision-making. What can we do as some people that are worryingly watching this and then seeing and hearing tech bros say stuff like this? What can we do? Is there anything that we can do to curb that?
Wow, the questions are getting bigger and bigger. And then the question back there in the background. Thank you, though. They're really good.
Wait, what was the last one? Was there one before?
The first one was about authoritarian society.
Can you answer that?
Sure.
Thank you for an amazing discussion. I'm really curious about the app limits thing and also what you were saying in the front about identity and stuff. All very, very interesting and something I think about a lot. And it got me thinking a bit about when the internet was somewhere you kind of could leave. Like, I'm like on the edge of Gen Z and millennial, I think. And at the start of it, you did go on the big computer at home and maybe chat to your friends on Facebook or MSN very, very briefly. And you were like online and you'd be talking to your friends and then you would log off and it was like, okay, now I'm not online, but now we're just like perpetually online. And I wonder if there's an option or what you guys would think about that kind of enforced app limits that aren't just personal and on an app or something, but like a curfew or something. Like if, you know, we didn't have access to social media past 10 p.m. on weeknights or something like that. And I've seen that kind of floated around as an interesting thought. And then just like a secondary question to that.
We're running out of time, sorry. But that's already a good question to get us focused. So we've got authoritarian societies, Bezos and water, and app limits and curfews. So Jesus. 2 or 3 minutes on whichever of those you prefer.
Off you go.
On the question of like, what can we do? And maybe because you mentioned you work in the corporate sector, like this is why the first thing that came to my mind is join your union. Please join your union, because unions like are really fighting the good fight when it comes to big tech. Trades Union Congress has done so much incredible policy work around fighting big tech, like, and they're a collective of loads of different unions. I'm part of the Union Society of Authors, and interestingly, like when I was writing the book, like in my contract there was nothing in there to protect me against generative AI. Sadly, my publisher never agreed, even though I joined my union and my union rep tried to get it agreed. They didn't agree to protect me and my work. And then what happened a few months later, my book personally hadn't yet got published, so it didn't get stolen, but loads, millions of other authors' books got stolen. So join your union is like what I would say. And then like authoritative.
No, but you,
can you answer that?
You're answering the questions, but you don't have to answer them all. So,
okay.
And we're running out of time. So, Indra, which one do you want to answer?
I was going to probably take the time limit thing.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Like, it half makes sense, like cutting social media off at 10 p.m. But I instinctively would probably say no to that, because I feel like you've still got to give humans some free will. You know, say for me, if I was building a career on social media and I had a full-time job and I wanted to come home and build my career, I feel like that almost feels a bit too restrictive. I think one thing I'd love to put in, maybe this is where we need to have cross-generational conversations, because I'm kind of sat here being like, I'm not under 16, but if you took social media away from me and I had hours on my hand, I'm not gonna lie, I have no idea what I would do. Like, I do have hobbies, and but I like hobbies that only take up X amount of time, and I think so many kids would just be like, what the hell.
No,
like, honestly, what?
Did you see the BBC interview with a teenager?
Yeah, yeah.
And they were like, what are you going to do now? And she goes, stare at a wall. And she was like deadpan. I was like, oh my god, sassy queen.
Yeah, but it went viral for a reason, because I think a lot of kids were like, yeah, we get it.
But we would, in time, we would figure it out. Do you know
exactly
what I mean?
And like, that's what you're doing with just, these mobile phones.
Again, it's like, it's norm building. We
sure,
are going to
yeah.
have to relearn to exercise a muscle that we haven't been exercising for a long time. And, you know, I think that's...
Now, that's hopeful.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, that is hopeful. Bezos and Walter, you'll have another day. I've just finished a book on AI, so we're definitely going to come back to that topic. But I just want to say thank you so much to Adele and Indra for a really fascinating, really lively conversation. I hope many of you can stay for the final event of the festival at 6:30, where a panel which I'm on, we're going to be talking about how can we overcome the divisions in society and work together to tackle the huge global challenges we face. Copies of Adele's book, Logging Off, are available for sale downstairs in the Great Hall. She's going to stay for signing. And you can also buy a copy of my latest book, The Space of the World, Can Human Solidarity Survive Social Media? And What If It Can't? Please join me in thanking the panel.
Thank you for listening. You can subscribe to the LSE Events podcast on your favourite podcast app and help other listeners discover us by leaving a review. Visit lse.ac.uk/events to find out what's on next. We hope you join us at another LSE event soon.